one more guest for this Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
You know, Adam, it's going great, and I just want to continue on for 1 second. It's the new year, so let's remind our bettors, shop, shop, shop. You guys were talking about those golf tournaments, and, you know, I'm sure the nice thing is the handicappers you have on, no, you never want to give the best number and have the listener always think they're getting the worst of the number. Well, you guys mentioned Jordan Spieth. I've just bet him at 14.5 to 1, and you guys mentioned Poulter at 60 to 1. I just got him at 77 to 1 listening to your show and jumping on board online. So, again, you know, those numbers are out there. You guys give them at a base, but do shop around and make yourself money and do not lose value.
Absolutely. A very, very important point here, especially when we're going to talk college basketball, because there is nothing that will piss you off more as a handicapper than those half-point or one-point losses because of a ridiculous foul situation at the end of the game or something like that. Always do what you can to get the best number that's out there at the time that you're able to bet these games or these golf tournaments or whatever else.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean to buy points, because we all know if you buy points in the long run, it's going to be a negative because you don't have those common numbers like you do in football. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't shop. If you have the ability to have multiple outlets, make sure you're looking at those and do it. Again, I bet my games early because I think the line's always going to move against me. I have that much confidence. And if I have the best line at the time I can bet and the line moves against me, so be it. I can't be pissed. I don't want to say wait and try to look for a better line later. But whenever you're making your plays, at that point, just make sure you have the best line.
And we'll talk about that point in a couple of minutes because it's kind of a corollary point to a listener question that I have that I want to ask you about. But before we get into that, excuse me, the national championship game last night, Clemson, big blowout win, not really what anybody expected. I think saying Clemson could win the game outright wasn't that hot of a take. Clemson winning by 28 points, maybe a little bit hotter of a take than that. But the college football season is wrapped up. You and I talked about it a little bit on Friday, sort of looking back at your season. Now what? What comes next for Rolf Michaels when it comes to college football, and when does that process start?
Oh, it starts now. I get into it slow because college basketball is my priority. But when there's times where, let's just face it, if you are always focused on one sport, you can get tunnel vision, you can get brain freeze. So there are times after a long Wednesday or Thursday, those huge cards, you know you got a big card on Saturday, I'll break out some college football work and start looking at teams towards next year. So for me, it's a nice respite in between a lot of college basketball, and it just gives your brain a different mentality. You know, you want to talk about the teams that have been there and done that the last couple years. Well, for those that do not like this Clemson-Alabama rivalry, you guys stay tuned because the odds are clearly there's going to be a part five. You know, a couple books that opened up already, the Superbook, the Las Vegas Superbook, opened up Clemson as a 9-5 favorite next year and Alabama 5-2. Everyone else in the country is 12-1 or higher. That would be Ohio State, the next highest. There's a different book I know, Caesars out here, opened Alabama the favorite at 2.5-1 and Clemson 4-1. I think those are little truer odds because Bama's going to be loaded. Bama's clearly the best team next year. Clemson loses so much on their O-line and D-line, having to restructure that line, even with Lawrence at quarterback, they're going to be in for a little more of a struggle. But when I say struggle, it still probably means undefeated. No one's going to give them competition in the ACC, and they very likely will be back in the playoffs again. So the other teams at under 20-1 for next year, Ohio State, Michigan, Georgia, and Oklahoma. Well, what have you done for me lately? The surprise then, Texas and Nebraska, the next two highest teams, two up-and-coming teams that we know with Tom Herman and Scott Frost are headed in the right direction.
Nebraska is a really interesting one because nobody's really been able to separate in the Big Ten West. I mean, I guess you could say Wisconsin has, but I mean, Northwestern's a team that's won 10 games a few times in recent seasons. And, you know, Iowa always winds up having a pretty solid campaign under Kirk Ferentz. The fact that Nebraska's up that high, certainly interesting to me. But I got to say, I mean, look, it is very likely that we get Clemson and Alabama part five next year and part four for the title. But when everybody else is 12-1 or higher, there's a couple of value teams there. I mean, maybe Ohio State is one of them. You know, obviously we'll see what happens with Justin Fields and if he's eligible right away. But man, I got to think Georgia's not a real bad look there at 12-1.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, it's you know, anything can happen. And I think Bama, you know, when I look at what they lost this year compared to what Clemson lost, I'd probably make Bama three times the favorite compared to Clemson to me. You know, Clemson's a team where if Lawrence gets hurt, they're going to lose some games, period, next year. They don't have the O-line or the D-line. So taking a look at those teams that have those young quarterbacks that came on, you know, we all know, we've seen now the game has changed. We now have quarterbacks that since – you know, that remember back to the Todd Marinovich days at USC. Since he was born, he never had refined sugar. He was born to be a quarterback from day one. Well, with these camps and with the training and with these coaches, these quarterbacks now have, you know, we see Dwayne Haskins play 1 year and then all of a sudden he jots up from, you know, nowhere to a Heisman top three and the number one quarterback taken in the draft. You see Trevor Lawrence coming up and playing as a true freshman. Well, we've seen that in the NFL the last few years. Pat Mahomes, after sitting out a year, what he's done this year, all five rookie quarterbacks have started. So that progression goes from high school to college, where freshmen can now play, and it's transferred over to the NFL, where rookies never could play, and now we know Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson, and, you know, those rookies can now play. So the game has changed, no question. It's not you lose a quarterback and, oh, my God, we're done for the next 2 years until that quarterback is a junior. You now have guys that can come in and fill that spot and play not only admirably but to an all-conference level.
So in terms of getting your, I guess, 2019 college football prep work done, even though they call that the 2019 national championship game, which is a massive pet peeve of mine, what are you doing? Are you just going off of your end of season power ratings? Are you just kind of doing research right now? What is, you know, when you say you're working on college football, what does that entail?
Well, what I do right now is I go in and I pull down all of the NCAA stats and I break down how many teams, how many players started for that team, and of that, how many were freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors, then I break it down to offense and defense. That process takes me about a couple weeks to do. So I'm having actually to copy and paste 130 teams, divide it out, pull out all the starters, pull out the offense and defense, and then by each class. And then that gives me an idea moving forward what teams are going to lose. Right now, you know, the old days used to be, back in the old Phil Steele days 15 years ago, you used to be able to pull down the final media guide. It would say these are the seniors leaving, and you basically had 95% of your work done. You knew who was coming back, and you knew who was gone. Well, we know times have changed with transfers and people moving out and, you know, people leaving early. So now it's just a much more in-depth process keeping track of teams. But right now I get my base, I do my stats, I do the players that started games last year, and then that's my first step is looking at how many teams played, you know, multiple teams underclassmen. You know, the last couple years I've done this report, and it's my underclassmen report. Washington, a few years ago, when they made their big jump up, they were the number one team in the country with underclassmen starts the year before. And Texas last year was the number one team in the country with underclassmen starts. So when you have one of those teams headed in the right direction and the majority of their games were started by underclassmen, those are the kind of teams I look for to make the big step up.
All right, so we'll transition here into this listener question that I got. And this comes from one of our listeners, Josh. And he said here that, you know, he listened last Friday when you and I talked about, you know, what you did well, what you feel you could improve on from a college football standpoint. And, you know, you mentioned sticking with teams where, you know, you felt like you had some value on them, felt like you had a good thought on them, and then coming back to them, even if they didn't come through for you that previous week. So the question here from Josh is basically, you know, when is it okay to admit that your model or your thinking may just be wrong? At what point do you feel like it's time to back off of that position?
Well, I would say after a second bad beat. You know, the difference what Josh is asking and what we talked about is if you had a blown call and lost a game, or you maybe had an injury and it cost you a game and you want to go back to a team, that's fine. But when you can give the check mark and say, my team got outplayed, my team didn't deserve to win, my team didn't deserve to cover, and it happens a second time, I have no problems jumping off a team, and there's many times I won't go back to them. And, you know, that's a wrong thing as well. But even professional handicappers, you know, a team can disappoint them so bad early that they just don't want to go back to them. But that's different than saying sticking with a team that you feel played well, sticking with a team that should have, could have, might have won, but maybe something happened down the stretch, and not playing them that week. So after, to answer his question, two bad losses, I have no problems backing off that team, because my mentality or my mindset on that team was wrong for one reason or another.
Well, I think that, you know, we can look even at last night's game in a vacuum. Yeah, Clemson won 44-16. Yeah, the game wasn't overly close from a score standpoint. I mean, Clemson moved the football at will. Alabama moved the football quite a bit in this game, too. The problem was they turned it over on downs a few times. They, you know, had a they were at the 1 yard line, had a penalty, wound up getting moved back. Tua started the game in the possession with a pick six. Just because Clemson won by 28 points and looked the way that they did, if they played that game again tomorrow, Alabama -2.5, Alabama -3, something like that, they're still a favorite in that game. And I think that's kind of the point that you want to think about here, is that even on the grandest stage, even with how great Clemson looked, even with how bad at times Alabama looked, if they played that game again, they're still a favorite. So you've got to keep that in mind. You have to separate that, you know, sometimes there's variance. Sometimes there are things that just don't really go a team's way. It doesn't mean that they're a ruined team. It doesn't mean that, you know, an Alabama favorite that was, you know, -230 on the money line is all of a sudden an underdog if those two teams played again. It just means that sometimes things happen, and you really have to separate, you know, what is a repeatable trend against what is just kind of happenstance or occurrence.
You know, Brad Powers and I were watching the game together yesterday, and we went back and we talked about, you know, something like the Ohio State-Purdue game, and I'm sure a lot of people remembered because it was national TV and that final was 49-20. Again, Ohio State would be the favorite. Ohio State's the better team. Ohio State's going to beat them 7 out of 10 times in Purdue in that setting. And, you know, it's a game that just balloons. And games balloon. People get on the road or people get out of sync and things just aren't clicking. So, yeah, that is a game where there's times when a team looks bad, you know, that I'll often go back to them, because now you get a fired up team looking to play off a loss, and they were embarrassed. So that is a powerful handicapping tool. If they suck win the next game and whiff, then that situation where maybe you want to back off them. But, you know, a one-loss game like that in the Ohio State situation against Purdue, in that Alabama situation, it's just a game that got away. The team was motivated. The game plan just didn't work. I mean, there were some calls that were just, I mean, you know, I think Nick Saban probably had a mini stroke on the sideline, because when they were going to run the fake field goal, and Clemson is in a prevent defense with 8 guys lined up within a yard, and you're going to have the snapper run the ball and the kicker be the lead blocker, what are you thinking? But, you know, again, it's part of the game and it happens.
Well, and I think what Josh's question really stems from, and I know this is something that this is the most difficult thing of the handicapping and betting process for me. I mean, I do a lot of, obviously everybody knows, you know, I do a lot of stuff for Bang the Book. I'm covering a lot of different sports. time management sometimes can be a thing, and even to some degree, burnout can be a thing. But still, the most difficult thing for me in this betting or handicapping process is confidence. It is a crisis of confidence because you are invariably, and I know that I'm saying you, I'm speaking to you, but also, I mean, you know, the overall you are going to run into a patch of bad variance. You're going to run into a patch where you can't buy a winner. It's just not going to happen. And confidence is, I think, one of the hardest things to consistently have in this business because, you know, all of us have high expectations. All of us have high standards. There's a competitive nature to betting, whether you want to beat other people in a contest format, you want to beat the books, you want to prove you're smarter or you're more knowledgeable or whatever else. There's a lot at stake here outside of just money from an emotional standpoint. And I think that crisis of confidence is the hardest thing about this business. And I think that's kind of what that question stems from is, you know, having confidence in your numbers and in your process, even when things aren't going your way.
Well, you know, the thing about the confidence is it's hard to be confident early in the year off a bad loss because, you know, there's numbers out there at the beginning of the season, but I don't worry about what others have. I put in the amount of work and I feel my numbers can match anyone. So when early in the year you have a couple bad beats, then you scratch your head much more saying, are my numbers wrong or did the teams just not do play up to their level? Later in the year, it's a little bit different. I mean, if you have a bad beat like Ohio State, Purdue, you know that situation. You know what's going to happen. But the first two or three weeks before they get the conference play, I completely agree with you. That's when it's tough to say, if you're having a bad week, what happens to your numbers the next week? Do you start to go back and say, well, I'm going to cut the difference between my numbers and Joe Public's numbers because maybe I was off? Or do you say, I'm going to stick with my numbers because I'm confident this was just an anomaly or these teams underachieved compared to what I thought they would do or the opposition overachieved? So, you know, that's the question mark especially. And, you know, like you said, it's clearly is. Everyone has an ego in the business. I mean, it's tough not to because your job is to put out winners. But even when you go, you know, I've had some incredible weeks this year and I'm on an incredible football run now. Even when you're going 15-1 in a 2-week period, if those next couple games you left off one, you're like, I should have used two more games. And it seems, you know, when it's going well, those games, they might be winning, or if it's going well, you might have left off a couple losers. And when it's going poorly, like you said, you know, you have eight games in the mix and you use four for your customers or four for a contest, you know, and you go 0-4 and the other teams went 3-1 and you go, wow, you know, I could have gone 3-5 instead of 0-4 or 1-3. So it's by far the toughest thing you do. And it just goes to me, it's this. If you put in the due diligence and if you put in your work and your numbers have worked in the past, you stick with your numbers. If you're a first-year handicapper and your numbers are struggling, well, then yes, maybe you do go a little more towards the median and see why you're off on this team and make adjustments. So, you know, the level of experience and previous success you had makes it so much easier to be confident with your numbers going into the next season.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, a lot of this industry is about perspective. It's about understanding what being successful is. I mean, if you're, you know, beating the closing line, if you're hitting 55, 56%, that's really successful. And in a lot of businesses, and even if you think back to, you know, being in school, if you got 56% on a test, your parents grounded you, you couldn't use the phone, you couldn't use the internet, whatever. You know, we're inclined to think
the internet. We're showing our age difference. When my parents grounded me, I just couldn't, you know, watch my black and white TV.
Okay, so Rolf couldn't use his tin can phone. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we've just always been – it's always been drilled into us that, you know, anything below, you know, this ridiculous success rate is not good enough. And you have to understand that the sliding scale in betting is so much different. And I think people have a hard time wrapping their heads around that. I think they have a hard time wrapping their heads around not chasing. And I think this segues really well into college football being done and getting into college basketball, because we've got four NFL games this weekend, two next weekend, then the Super Bowl. We've got the NBA still going on and the NHL. But a lot of people are going to shift their focus to college basketball right now. And a lot of those people haven't been paying much attention to college basketball thus far. So this is a very dangerous time of year for a lot of handicappers that don't have that perspective or have too much of an ego.
Yeah, you know, it's now where Joe Public starts looking at records and not how strong a team is. And, you know, people think a winning record means that you were a good non-conference team, and a losing record means you were a bad non-conference team. And you and I and our listeners know, you know, that's the farthest from the difference, farthest from the truth, because with the strength of schedule and with 353 teams, you know, any team, well, you know, let's say any group of five or any of the major, any power five or any of the major, you know, when you're talking basketball, I add the American in there, and any of those conferences in college basketball can schedule a winning non-conference season. Anyone, even the worst team in the Big Ten, if they want to have a 10-2 non-conference record, they can do so by scheduling accordingly. So that's what people have to remember, is that, you know, you really, there's so much variance with the strength of schedule, your home games. Again, we talked about Duke. Duke has yet to play a road game. It's January 8th, and they have yet to play a true road game this year. So, yeah, you're 12-1, and you're going to Wake Forest tonight, but that's the first time you've ever played in a hostile environment. So, you know, that's a little different of a scenario. But then you do have some teams that have played, you know, monster non-conference schedules and are still that good. You know, Michigan State comes to example. Kansas has played the number one schedule down to 12-2. They have some injuries. Yeah, well, they're a legit good team. So, you know, I'm going to take it a step further. And one thing I really look at now, as much as records, and this is a little more of a deep dive, but tempo changes so much from non-conference to conference. The translation in foot, you know, and we've talked about this, you have some teams in the SEC that score 50 points in their non-conference games, get into conference play and score single digits or score 13 or 17 points, because they're now facing SEC defenses that face them every year, that know their personnel, that know their tendencies. Well, you have a team like Michigan State. You know, we know Michigan State has been a very slow team, but you look back in their last five games, they're averaging almost 90 points a game, and right now their adjusted tempo is 73. That's very high. You look back at last year where they finished, they were 234. So those are the kinds of situations that you look at where perhaps Izzo has let his team run a little bit more. Yes, I think they'll be a little more up-tempo this year now that they have Cassius Winston, a point guard, and Dennis McQuaid is also a guy who can handle the ball very well, and they're, you know, they are a little more up-tempo. But so not only do you have to look at records, but it's very, very important to look at tempo if you're going to look at totals as well.
Now, something else I wanted to ask you about here, and, you know, we've had Brent, the head risk manager at DSI Sportsbook, on the show pretty much every week here throughout the football season, and he's kind of, in passing, made some comments sort of lamenting the amount of work that goes into college basketball and college basketball risk management with a ton of games on the board, and how relatively meager the returns are because the handles are so low on these games. Well, that dynamic changes a little bit now because you've got people that, you know, maybe they had a good college football season and they want to try and, you know, double and triple their bankroll by playing college basketball, or they didn't have a great college football season, still have money left to burn. They're going to go and play college basketball. So the market dynamics change a little bit now in that these games, especially the marquee ones, will start to see larger betting handles. We'll start to see more investment. Does that change anything in the handicapping strategy for Ralph Michaels, knowing that, you know, there is more public money out there? Maybe some of these public teams are shaded a little bit. Does it change anything for you?
You know, it doesn't. I am aware, though, that I would say your top 20 teams, when they're a home favorite, you're probably laying a point, maybe a point and a half more than you should. So when you like those underdogs in those roles, don't be afraid to play them. But, you know, it doesn't mean if I have a team and they're a top 20 home favorite and, you know, I love the situation they're in, it doesn't mean I won't play them. You know, right now, you know, there aren't, you know, who are the fan favorites this year? You know, I don't know. People, you know, Michigan's undefeated and one of the best defenses in the country, but there's a lot of teams that hate Michigan. You know, Duke, you have the love-hate relationship as well. There's teams that love Duke and there's teams that just hate Duke. You know, Gonzaga is a team that's going to be there at the end, and some people love rooting for the mid-majors, and some people say, oh, they've been there and done that. So while you have a lot of teams that have historically been favorites, you know, we have new blood in that mix now. You know, all of a sudden, Texas Tech is there playing well, and Tennessee is perhaps the best team in the SEC this year. You know, and Nebraska is up there, and Iowa State. So, you know, while there always have been some fan favorites, you know, the Kentuckys, the Kansases, the North Carolinas, we're seeing a new influx of some other teams. So, you know, maybe that adjustment isn't as much this year with the top 10 being a little bit different than it's been in the past.
Well, here's something else I want to ask you about, Rolf, because, you know, I think this is a very important point to make at this point in time for the college basketball season as well. You know, you trust your numbers. We've talked about that already. You have a ton of trust in your process, in the amount of research, in the amount of work that you do. We are seeing some line moves in the college basketball market on a daily basis, obviously. Some of them relatively significant. Tonight, Indiana State's gone from 8.5 to a 5.5-point favorite. Valparaiso down from 4 to 2.5. You know, we're talking about some of those single-digit numbers. You know, those are line moves that do have some significance to them. But you're trusting your numbers. Do you really get concerned when a line moves against you?
No, because right now, I mean, you look at these lines and, you know, the offshore books are a little bit different, but you can see when these lines open, Vegas as a market is just copying and pasting someone's numbers that opens. So, you know, we have this market, as you said, we have this transition market, and there's a lot of syndicate groups. Yes, they're still out there. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not as if though they win 80%. But they bet a lot of money when they're looking at a certain number, and a lot of times they buy back numbers when the lines move, but they know they can move the lines, so they do manipulate the market. And to me, if I get a line move that is in my favor, I'm not worried. This isn't the days of, at least, you know, I don't think it is, a day where you're going to have any Division I game fixed. You know, there perhaps a player could be in on something, but if my number's there and the line is moving in my favor, I'm happy. I have customers that call me all the time. You know, it's funny that customers would actually want the line to move against you. Like, people are betting with your side. They think if the line moves in your favor, something's wrong. What's wrong with this game, Rolf? When you have a big play, the line usually moves. You know, there's people that play your game, and there's a lot of people that play your game, and the line moves the opposite way. But if that line comes down, it's like, what's wrong? Who's injured? What's going on? Well, it's just a line move. It's some group of people that bet the game. They like the game. They feel confident with their number. I feel confident with my number. Let's go head-to-head and see what happens at the end. So, you know, if a line moves, I am not concerned. I do look, of course. Was there a late injury? Did something happen that someone got suspended that I missed? And that's a different scenario. But if I read everything I need to read and I know the situation of the players and the coaches and nothing's changed, a line move doesn't faze me at all.
Well, and one thing I encourage our listeners to do here, you know, again, we're going to have to dive really deep into college basketball, and soon enough it'll be the NBA and maybe some more NHL stuff here on the show. If there are any college basketball topics, anything team specific you want to know about, you know, of course, and maybe futures prices too, now that we're about but 2 months and a week or so away from March Madness. Please hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripods, or you can reach out at Bang the Book. We'll get those talking points here on the show, whether we crowdsource opinions or, you know, if you just want to hear from one handicapper about them. Definitely encourage you to do that. Reach out, because we want to make sure that we're covering a lot of different concepts for college basketball, the NBA, NHL, and so on. So, Rolf, as we wrap up this segment here, I know you've got technical and situational plays lined up for us. Let's go ahead and start with the situational play that you're looking at. I'm not sure if it's for tonight or tomorrow or when it is.
You know, it is for tonight. And before I get to that, Adam, I just want to mention one thing that I pulled up for the show, which I found very, very interesting. We talked about Duke playing their first road game tonight. You know, last week on the show, I played against West Virginia because they were making their first road game. There are only five teams of the 353 teams in college basketball that are shooting at least 5% better on the road than at home. That includes road and neutral games. So while we automatically assume that everyone plays better at home than on the road, San Jose State is a bad team. So they're a team that's played a couple games neutral that they did well. San Jose is actually shooting 8% better on the road than at home. St. Joseph's is 8% better on the road than at home. Southern Illinois, 6.4%. Villanova, 5.5%. And Nevada, 5.0% better on the road than at home. So, again, I really tell our listeners, you have to look at home-road dichotomy, but don't automatically assume that the better team or the team plays better at home. Situational is a team I really like in the MAC, the way they're playing. Ball State tonight. They're playing Eastern Michigan. Eastern Michigan was picked first in their division with Toledo and Ball State. It was really a three-man race, but Ball State was really the third team in the MAC West. Well, they're 10-4. There are four losses this year to Purdue, Virginia Tech, Alabama, and Evansville, all four losses away from home. Again, Eastern Michigan is a team that people thought would be there. They were a 22-13 team last year, made it to the postseason. And this year, though, they have really struggled. They are off a home defeat against Buffalo. This is Ball State's MAC home opener. The place will be excited. Eastern Michigan, effective field goal percentage on offense, number 333. Eastern Michigan, effective field goal percentage on defense, 295. Ball State big.
Well, and you brought up a good point, and let me touch on this real quick. You know, Ball State, with that home opener in the MAC, getting back into MAC play a little bit, it's time where home court advantages have to go back to normal, because the students are starting to come back for the next semester.
Oh, absolutely. It's we know it's conference play. We know we're back into the mix, and the student sections are there. And the real fans are there. You know, during the holidays, you have a lot of people that are traveling that stay away. And those fans that have a solid base, you know, Houston's one that I played on them Sunday, and they were hosting Memphis. Well, Houston has a newer arena, a couple years old, and they sold out against Memphis on a Sunday afternoon. You know, it's a situation that you have to look out when teams sell out their games. Those coaches are well aware of that. And Sampson talked about it. He said, you know, he asked when he thought his fan base truly believed in him. You know, the Cougars, one of three undefeated teams this year. And he said, when we sold out against NJIT, he said, when you have those four-letter schools come in and you still sell out, you know your fan base believes in you. Yeah, well, you know, if you have an SEC team coming in, you're going to sell out. But when you have New Jersey Institute of Technology come in and you sell out, that's when you know your fans believe. Well, it was sold out against Memphis. It was a nice home court edge, and they took advantage. And teams especially that play defense thrive on that type of home court edge. You know, the situational, the technical – sorry.
No, I was going to say, go ahead with your technical play.
the technical play is a system. And, you know, we talk about angles a lot, and there's some angles that, you know, are good, and teams could be 12-0 or 13-0, but those are team-specific angles. This is actually a situation that goes back all the way to 2007, and it's 40.3%. So we're talking about gambling, and if you could find a system that has 300 plays over the last 11 years and it's hit 60%, those are the types you want to look at. Well, this one has two parts to it, so it's not as simple as just saying this and this. If a team lost by 30 or more two games ago, and then they won their last game as a dog or a small favorite, so you're off a bad blowout loss, now you either pulled the upset or you're in a battle for a team and you won that game, the following game you're only 122, 181 with four ties. That's a 40.3% win mark or a 59.6 play against. The situation is Indiana State. Indiana State lost to Loyola by 35 points two games ago. They beat Bradley as a 3.5-point favorite in their last game. Now they're a 6-point favorite to Missouri State. So this system is a 59.7 play on Missouri State plus the 6 against Indiana State tonight.
Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there right now, Rolf?
You know what? If anyone is interested, I have my second 5% play of the college basketball season up today. It's $2 at WagerTalk. So clean and simple. If you ever wanted to try my top play and only second top play of the entire college basketball season, go to WagerTalk. Right on the front page, you're going to see Cal Sports is the $2 Tuesday capper. A 5% totals play tonight in college hoops, $2.
Well, and of course, make sure that you follow Rolf on Twitter as well, at CalSportsLV. Lots of great information being shared over there. Rolf Michaels, wagertalk.com. Today's Tuesday, $2 handicapper over there at WagerTalk. Thank you so much for the time, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, bud. Talk to you.